I just have to get all my stuff working in the right order and everything going the right way, and I can get started here. So hello, everybody. I would say good morning, good afternoon, but I guess it depends on where you are. So I'm Joy Hatch. I am going to be part of this panel here. By way of background, I'm just going to tell you, you know, I've been with CampusWorks for many years now, but more importantly than that was before my time at CampusWorks, I was a CIO for the most part, whether that was at the VP level or at just the CIO level, but it's in that role. I was thinking back as I got ready to do this and thinking about all the different ERP systems that I've worked with. And I'm going to date myself here when I start talking about stuff, but it's been Datatel and CMDS and Cars, you know, along with Banner and Workday and PeopleSoft. So yeah, if I haven't dated myself there, I think I just did. In case the white hair didn't give it away, I think I just dated myself, didn't I? So talk about some old systems, but I've been, every school that I've been at has some point in time has done some type of an implementation. So, you know, I've got all these nice little stories that I hope to share as we go through this next part here.
Thank you, Joy. I'm Liz Murphy. I'm the CEO of CampusWorks, but I'm really here today as someone who's been deeply steeped in implementations and in the ERP and SIS world. I have 300 implementations under my belt in one way or another. When I did the count, I was pretty shocked. Most of those implementations were in a supporting role, really helping institutions to plan those implementations, help them get out of the ditch when they got in the ditch, et cetera, those kinds of things. So Joy and I are here because we are passionate about this topic. We are very, very personally interested in saving folks some of the pain and suffering that is attributed to ERP/SIS implementation. So I do want to say to you that when we refer to ERP, we are talking about the student information system. We're also talking in this session about big projects overall, whether it's a new CRM or it's a new LMS. The things we learned about implementing cover the gamut. They most typically get lined up with ERP implementations because they're so brutal, but they really extend to any other kind of huge project that you have. So keep your antenna up. I also want to encourage the two of you that have already completed your project, bravo. Please feel free to let us know in the chat if you've got something to contribute verbally or you just want to put it in the chat. Please share your experiences. This is really about having a forum to talk about what works, what doesn't work, why it does, why it doesn't, right? It's really a dialogue. It's not meant to be a quote unquote presentation, if you will. I think you're going to learn the most if you really lean in and you let us know what's most important to you. You can see the agenda here. These are the key topics we've sort of sketched out relative to what we're going to talk about. But again, we don't want to talk at you. We want to have a dialogue. So we'll kick it off kind of in a Q&A sort of format between Joy and myself. But we hope that you will either come off mute and talk to us or send us some information via chat so we can leave you with some answers to your most pressing questions. So with that, I'll turn it back over to Joy.
So we are going to get started today talking about planning. And this is a quote from EDUCAUSE. As Laurel stated in the beginning, this is all based off of a lot of it is based off the research that we did with EDUCAUSE. And they've talked about a lot of things. There is a lot of research there. You will get, as Laurel said, she will send you links to the implementer's dilemma and some other stuff at the end of the webinar. But this is an interesting quote from that study where it talks about a system as complex, deeply impactful as the ERP, warrants an implementation strategy that's equally as complex and deeply impactful across the institution. Those of you who have implemented or you're in the process of implementing, you know how complex this is and what happens. We've often thought about, when we talk about planning, let's think about it this way. We've often heard why people ask us, we know we should go through all this work to plan for the implementation. But I'm going to go to Liz and I'm going to say, so Liz, why is this so crucial? Why is planning so crucial as we start this?
So one of my favorite people that has taught me a lot in my professional journey is Stephen Covey. And he always says, begin with the end in mind. sometimes we have a knee-jerk reaction to problems that we're facing. And it isn't until we stop and really think about the outcomes we want to achieve that we can gain the clarity that's necessary to really get the result that we're looking for. A lot of times I think the question here is there's no argument that these big projects need to be planned, right? Nobody's going to say, oh, I went in without a project plan. Question is, how robust was your planning? And what was the pre-work that you did before you started to do planning, right? Sometimes institutions get so focused on choosing the right piece of software and the right implementation partner that they forget about what has to happen at the institution to get buy-in, to think about what the impact is going to be on the staff. We're going to talk about that a little later. About what has to stop being done to make room for doing this project. And I bet if I could see all your faces, I would see people laughing or shaking their heads, because how many times have we said, yep, this is the priority, but we can't take anything off the plate, right? So how are we going to do that, right? And so planning is a very broad topic, and it really begins with making sure that all the people, a greater number of people than those you think need to be involved, are involved in the process, so you have the buy-in you need, and also laying out a clear path to what you want to do with this solution when it's implemented. The worst thing you can do, and you've heard people say it 100 times, and you promised yourselves you'd never do it, is configure your old system into your brand new multi-million-dollar system, right? Happens all the time. But if you don't have a new blueprint for what the new system should do, the features in that system aren't going to drive you there. You have to begin with the redesign processes and the focus and the plan that's going to make that happen. Joy, I saw you nodding your head. Do you have anything you'd like to add?
Oh, there's so much that I could add to that one. You know, when you talk about planning ahead. And keep in mind, though, that it's not just planning that's, I don't think, for ERP implementations. They're the biggest thing you're ever going to do in your life. And then we do them over and over, and it makes me wonder why. But aside from that, yeah, but it's also the little projects. When you think about like a digital catalog, a bookstore system. So think about a digital catalog. It is crucial to what you're doing. So you can't just treat it like, oh, it's just a little project. Because so many students rely on it, so many faculty rely on it, everything in the registrar's office relies on that. So you have to do it, and you have to do it right. So you really have to plan, you know, and you have to look ahead. The other big thing that comes in here that we sometimes don't think about is our data and the quality of our data. So, you know, I'm gonna toss this one back at you again too, Liz. And this little comment here, many of those parts moving in harmony. And I think data is a huge part of that. How important is that quality of data and everything that we do?
Oh, I wish we were in person, because I bet you all would have something to say about that. Yeah, it is, I guess, to me, the two giant pillars of success in implementations are the processes and the data, because those are the ingredients to the cake you're baking. And without them, you don't know what you're going to get, right? And I guess I would say one of the things that I've learned is that people are really intimidated by their data. They're almost afraid to find out what the condition is. And they think, you know what, let's just slam this puppy in there and we'll clean it up on the back end. And that is the worst mistake that you can make. To really clean up data, to really get tight with what's coming over into your new system, which is really going to allow you to use the features in that solution, whatever kind of solution it is, the data has to be really clean. Otherwise, you're producing something that you're then going to have to pick apart manually, right, to try to get decisions made, or what it's going to display to you is going to be misshapen, right? This is really logical. So the question is, why don't we do it? And we don't do it because it takes so many people to get clarity around what the data should be and how it should be configured and what the field should be. By the time you get to data migration, and Joy can talk more about this, by the time you get to data migration, all those things already have to be considered. So the data migration tools, they're not helping you decide that. You have to do that, I hope, with the benefit of redesigned business processes, so you know what data you need, where, and what you're going to use it for, like what's the plan. And then you're going to take that and you're going to be able to tell it where to go in the new system. And that's really what the migration tools do. Typically, vendors today, they've stepped away from the quote unquote converting of the data. Back in the day, when Joy and I first started to do implementations, vendors used to take responsibility for the conversion of your data. They generally don't do that anymore. What they do is provide a repository to which you dump your data, and then they sort of dispatch it into their systems, which means what goes in there needs to already be ordered in the way that you want it, the way you want it to come out. So it really takes a collaborative effort at the institution to agree on sort of a new way of thinking about how you're going to use your system. And by the way, this is true whether you are purchasing a new system or you are optimizing the system you already have. Because one of the things we find when we do assessments of, should I like to say love it or list it, for those of you who are HTV fans, like, do I keep my old system and just make it, renovate it, or do I buy something else? And for those people who decide to love it, one of the things they still have to consider is, what is it like, my features and my solution are good, but the way I've configured my processes, how I want to do business, and how my data is structured in that system, giving me the wrong answers or impeding my ability to move forward. Joy and her teammates on our enterprise services team have actually come up with a series of solutions to help with that data process. And Joy, I'm wondering if you can talk about what some clients are doing now that's making it a little bit easier.
You know, I think having a data governance plan in place is golden when you go to an implementation. So some of the services that we provide are data management. We go in and work with you to help you define what the fields are. Number one, what type of data should be in that field? What are you going to call it so that everybody knows that? And then you build a dictionary, and you have a dictionary now that people can use, and even built into the application. As you're putting data in, it could come up and say, hey, this is the kind of data that we need in this field, in case you have those questions. But that allows you to collect those random pieces of data because you know you're going to have them. You know you're going to want to know the t-shirt size of a new student who's enrolling, because you're going to want to give them a t-shirt. But where do you keep it? So knowing where to put that information so that it's valuable, and then most importantly, you can turn around and you can report off of it, is crucial to that. So having a data governance plan in place, whether like Liz says, you're going to love it or list it, is golden. And if you have it in place before you list it, it will make that whole thing of moving to a new system that much easier, because it is going to be crucial for your migration.
I think one of the things we see happening, two things that get skipped early in the timeline, right? So institutionally, you know, institutions go through a lot of consideration about whether or not they're going to go off and get a new system, right? During that consideration time is the time to take care of process redesign and data cleanup. Don't, if you're the CIO or a leader in your institution, or you can influence that, use that time well, right? Some of you, the two people that said they are committed when we did the poll, committed to making a change, how are you using the time between now and when you start your implementation, right, to actually get those things worked out? Sometimes we overlook that because we think, oh, we have time for that later. But typically what happens is there's momentum once you make the decision, right, to either purchase something new or optimize. And then you don't take the time when you start the project to pause and take care of those two things, which are really, they're your blueprint for how you're going to move forward more than anything else.
And it's interesting. I'm going to move on to the next topic because I think it plays into this so well. And I was trying to figure out this, but when we talk about making changes here and talk about looking at the new system, the other thing that I do believe is left off is the human factor. What happens during your implementation? You know, how are you going to get everybody to come along on this change? And Liz, you've already talked about transitions and what does that mean for us? So when we look at this, I think this is huge. And this whole thing of changing along the way. Now, I think back to my career, you know, change management, it's what we at CampusWorks, we call this transition management, but it's all about change. You know, it's something that's crucial to everything we do, but it's not something that's been top of mind for us. But the thing about it is we've always done this. We've always done ERP projects, even though we didn't call it change management. We survived. The projects went in, you know, the processes were changed, the people used the system. So why has it become so important today? Why EDUCAUSE calls this the number one thing that is crucial in implementations? Why is this just now becoming really important?
Yeah, I think, Chuck, I see your question. So I'm going to answer Joy's question. And then Joy, I'm going to have you look at Chuck's question about data governance. I think the reason that most people call it change management, but we are students of William Bridges. And if you haven't read his it's a Bible. It's a little yellow Bible. And it's called Managing Transitions. And the difference between a change and a transition is the action. If you think about change, you know, think about changing your clothes, right? You're in one state, then you're in another state. Dr. Bridges says, while there's an ending and a beginning, the most critical part of making a sustainable transition is that piece in the middle called the neutral zone. And that's the place where life happens and fear, uncertainty, and doubt occur, excitement occurs. That's where all the machinations that go on with us as humans, as we fight differences, even though we're excited about differences, right? That's why we call it transition, because it's active. The reason this has become so important is because we have found that while you can have the fanciest piece of software, the best programming, and really clean data, if the people do not feel engaged and don't buy into using it, you still are not going to accomplish what you set out to do. What was so fascinating in the EDUCAUSE study is Joy and I have been talking, and my colleagues have been talking about this for many years, and it never got attention. Like, CIOs and others were like, yeah, it's really the technology. Let's talk about the programming. Let's talk about these features. And even presidents would say, well, is it going to do this? I really needed to do this. This time in the EDUCAUSE survey, by the way, this is the first time EDUCAUSE has done an implementation, an ERP implementation survey. It's been in higher ed. That's unbelievable, right? So this time, change management, transition management came up as a number one item. And the reason is because at the end of the day, the humans have to do the stuff. They have to buy into it. They have to enable it. So no matter how good or bad your technology is, if they're not on board, nothing happens. That's why it's finally become really front and center. Joy, let's go back a little and answer. Could you answer Chuck's question about typical timeline for a data governance structure in prep for an ERP move?
And I was asking somebody who could tell me the answer, but I don't have that yet. But what I have seen is typically going to take anywhere from like 4 to 6 to 8 weeks. And it's going to depend on exactly how much time you're putting into that and how much time people are able at your institution are able to participate. Because it's not a decision that's made in isolation. It's a decision that's made with a lot of constituents on board.
It does not have to be horribly time consuming. No. I would say the prep for the person who's facilitating it probably takes a couple weeks to structure it, just given that they're doing another job, right? And then I would, you know, the other part of that is how do you get the people in the room to have the dialogue in each of the areas, right? It's most ideal if you have some business processes already laid out, the new processes, but it's not essential. You could do the reverse and talk about where it is and then apply the fields to the processes once they're identified. I saw another comment. Yes. So Tony is writing about how important it is that the leadership needs to be on board with this. And that, by the way, that in different questions on the EDUCAUSE study, senior leadership support, executives, not just quote what we call executive sponsorship, because we could have a whole webinar on what that is and isn't, but senior leadership support, including the president, right? And transition management were the top one or two items. They fluctuated depending on how the question was asked. Absolutely critical. What's fascinating to me is when I work a lot with presidents on a number of issues, and they'll say, oh, you know, I've got a great executive sponsor, really in the details, knows a lot about what's going on, you know, all that kind of thing. And I'll say, but have they heard you talk about how important it is? Have you told everyone and reminded everyone, not just when you sign the software contract or the implementation contract, but are you constantly reminding them why this is critical to what you want to do going forward? Well, no, I think they just know. No, people don't. They don't. And it's not because intellectually they can't handle it. It's because the rest of their work is going. So every single day, the rest of their work is infiltrating their world, and they're not picking their head up to say, hey, you know what? Spending some time testing those scenarios has to be a priority. The leadership needs to say that, and they also need to act it out, right? They need to be able to say, I care that you're doing this. I'm paying attention to the fact that you're doing this. I'm watching that you're doing this, not in a monitoring kind of way, but in a, this is a priority. And by the way, I'm not going to be one of those leaders that piles on 67 more projects while I tell you this is the most important thing. That's the hardest thing. That's the hardest thing.
So I pulled up the slide on institutional support, and we could go back to the transition management in just a minute, but you just talked about it. So I thought it was really important to pull that up right here, because it's amazing to me how everybody says 75% of people think this institutional support is the most critical factor. We have horror stories and we have success stories of how this really works. Liz is on the phone all the time with presidents, so she can tell you, she has some incredible stories about what's worked and what works well and what doesn't work, and how you can turn stuff around because of institutional leadership supports.
You know, the most, if any of you on the call are actually executive sponsors, I would say this to you. And if not, if you work for an executive sponsor or you're a project leader or going to be a project lead or a CIO, I think the most important thing you can do is not abdicate the decision-making responsibility. That sounds so harsh, but what I mean is I've seen presidents get really whipsawed by saying, I'm going to do whatever my staff thinks we should do. Well, you know what? You're not always going to agree. And so someone, the executive sponsor, the president, somebody needs to say, I am putting the flag here and we're all running toward the flag. And so we might get to the flag differently, but this is the flag. I'm really clear about that. And by the way, we have to get to the flag in this general time frame. If you've got the flag and you've got the general time frame, everything else can kind of coalesce around that. Where I've seen leadership take a wrong turn in these projects is when they aren't clear about their expectations because they're afraid they're going to make the wrong choice. They need to lean in. They need to lean in. And if some of you on this call are the ones who help to, who have the ears of those people, I would say to you, keep the messaging like simple. And if you will, pardon the B word, business related, meaning don't get in the weeds. You don't have to talk about, you know, the nitinoid challenges of programming or this little thing all the way in, you know, under the surface. What matters is, hey, we're not getting the level of participation we need. It would really help if you did this, and that's going to help to avoid us going off schedule. And the cost of being off schedule 90 days is this. okay, now as an executive, I know exactly what I'm dealing with. So if I'm putting extra pressure on my team because, you know, we have an accreditation visit coming and it's all hands on deck and everything's pausing while we're doing that, great, then I know what that cost is to me and I've made an informed decision, right? So line up those conversations that way. It really helps sponsors and executives be good at what they're supposed to do, and they need your help to be able to do that.
And I think we've also seen cases where I know I can think of several clients where the presidents are so involved. You know, yes, they're there, they will put the hammer down on their staff, on CampusWorks if we're working with them, and on the vendors as well. So you know exactly what the expectations are. They're totally informed. And that really drives for a successful project because everybody is being held accountable to what they're doing. I think on the other hand, there's presidents that we can see who are not necessarily involved, who are just kind of like doing what you've talked about. And then all of a sudden a crisis happens and so the project is going off the rails and the crisis happens and they get involved. They can bring that back on track because of their involvement in it. So that really matters. It counts.
It does. And if you have a project, if your project isn't going as smoothly as you'd like, and your leadership is struggling to provide the level of support you think you need, I would just encourage you, all is not lost. We've had presidents who really had wake-up calls to say, yikes, I didn't know I was supposed to do that. I didn't know that matters. It's like, it does matter. Let us get you ready for that conversation, right? So, because sometimes they call us when the project's already in the ditch. And so it's like, okay, well, what has happened? Let's figure that out. All right, here's where you are. You know, how are we going to get it back? Here's what your role needs to be. So please don't give up on that. It's worth having the conversation. Just keep in mind the context that the person, we need to do this for all our communication, but really good to remind ourselves with all the challenges we have today in higher ed, just make sure you're really clear about what it is, what the problem is, and what the opportunities are for solutions as you're presenting it back to the leadership, and how, you know, a little bit of commitment from them and specific actions from them can make a huge difference. So if you're prescriptive, they'll know exactly what they need to do. And then once they start to do it and see the results, it's like, oh, I don't have to know all the technical details. I just had a president today say, and I've met this chancellor a couple of times. And I said, you know, I'm going to be where you are. Do you want to have a meeting? I'd rather have all my subject matter experts with me when I talk to you. And I'm like, I'm not that scary. I don't know that much. I can't stop you. But sometimes I think presidents think that we want to go really deep instead of we're really just trying to help them, you know, drive, right? And we're driving all the people who have the subject matter expertise to get us to where we need to be.
Yeah, and an ERP transformation is weary. When I'm gonna go back to a little bit of change management to link this in here. But it really is, it's draining, everybody's changing, you're doing so much. You told a story the other day too of a president who talked about doing all this stuff and almost like carried a bat around that's covered in cotton and saying, hey, we're going to make this happen. So that's how leadership comes into transition management too, because it is really important to do that.
Yeah, it's critical, really critical.
We also talked about being entrenched in processes, and you've talked about process reviews and process managements. I have seen projects where when we talk about change, if you don't have something ready, you know, the first thing you're going to do, you're going to have your planning, you're going to get together, and then the vendor is going to come to you and say, okay, it's time for us to put our new processes in. What do you want to do? If you don't have a roadmap already, you know, the easiest thing to do is going to be, okay, I've got to have this done in 2 days. Well, here, I'm just going to take my existing process and we're going to put that in there. So what's the point in having a new system? So you really need to, when it comes to change, everybody needs to be cognizant of, you're not there to repeat your old system. You know, you don't want to do that because then you haven't really gained anything from this huge investment you made. But that's a part of change that's really important. And that goes right along with that business process review that we need as well.
Absolutely. When you're forced to make a quick decision, human nature, you can read every study you want on the planet, but we are going to go to what we know. It's something like, I think it's 88% of the time, you will repeat the behavior you are most familiar with. 88% of the time. And is that really what you want?
This is an interesting place to bring in a pilot story, but that's the one thing that when I was doing my dissertation was on student pilots. But that's the thing. You will always go back to your core knowledge and the core things that you know, especially when you're in an emergency situation. You're going to go back to what you know and the basics of what you learned. So it's really important to learn and to do the things at the beginning right, because you're setting those core examples for yourself and for everybody else.
That's exactly right.
Just a little interesting twist on that.
Yeah, so Joy is a pilot in her own right. And so she not only taught them, but she is one. Well, I guess you have to be one to teach them, but just a good thing.
There we go. So this is an interesting thing, because this particular slide here talks about the ERP evaluation selection. I think most of the folks on this call have probably been through that. I know that I've worked with some of them to go through this process, but it does bring everybody together. And I think that's a big key to being successful, is having everybody together, working together. And I think as you start to collaboratively identify all these requirements, you're starting to build that change that's happening. You're starting that transition right there. That's going to carry you through your entire project.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be shy about telling people that from the very beginning. Just let them lean into, you know, how many of them have been through an implementation? How many are just quake at the word implementation, right? It's a word that has so much baggage associated with it. Have some fun with it. Let people emote about what they've been through. What did they learn in a positive way? And what are the lessons they learned from the very first maneuver you make on any kind of project, any kind of transition, adding a new program at the institution, putting up a new CRM, change an organizational structure change. Remember that the first communication needs to be thoughtful about transitioning, because you're setting the pins for everything else that's going to happen, right? And so one of the things we learned years ago at CampusWorks is that no matter what we're doing, it is laden with transition management, because we're not successful getting our clients to sustain the transition if we don't think about it from the very, very beginning. Right. And also don't give up on people who are struggling in that neutral zone, because everybody's coming at it from a different place. Right. And sometimes we tag people and we say, you know, they're just not on board. They're never going to be on board. That's not necessarily true. Maybe we're just not providing what they need to get comfortable. Right. And I think when you lean in a little more and you're really thoughtful about that, it goes a long way. And again, here you're trying to create a sustainable situation here, not go live on your system and 9 months in have people complaining to the president that we want to go back to the old system. It happens. Like, we don't want that to happen.
And that's where building that transition management from the very beginning and continuing on through is so crucial. Because yes, we'll start it maybe during a selection process as you gather stuff, but you have to go all the way through that, because everybody changes at that different pace. Yep. So you've got to have something for everybody. You've got to continue. It doesn't, even though you're going live and you're like 2 weeks from going live, doesn't mean that everybody's there yet. And you have to continue with that. So I'm going to switch to a new topic. We've kind of talked about this a little bit. We talked about executive sponsorship and leadership, but budgets. Budgets are huge, and planning for implementation is huge. In my opinion, it's a guessing game. You know, what's it going to cost me? How is it going to do that? All those kind of things. But there are some good strategies to help you make sure that you get the right budget as close as possible. So, Liz, what kind of strategies would you suggest that we use for some of these things?
Yeah, so I would say two things can save your budget. Not save the money in your budget, but allow you to stay on budget. One is be honest. And two is be decisive. So let me talk about being honest first. And I'm gonna throw the decisive part to Joy, because she's always in the middle of I have a favorite saying, when is a decision a decision? We work with a lot of folks who decide and then undecide and redecide. And that's not in your best interest. I'll let Joy talk about that in a minute. So why can being honest help your budget? A lot of times the things that the institution is willing to spend money on are the software and the implementation. That's not an honest assessment of what it's going to take to make this change. If you're not willing to accept the fact that people on your team are going to have to do a whole bunch of work, no matter how many people from the outside you hire, there's somebody from the inside is going to have to say, yep, that's the right thing. You got the right answer, right? If you're not honest about what you really need, about the integrations, about the talent in IT, about the staffing in IT to actually carry the water on the technical stuff, about whether or not you actually have someone who's capable of being the project manager, et cetera, what's going to happen is you're going to sign these contracts. You're going to think your total project cost is $5 million. And at the end of it, you're going to be somewhere closer to $8 million. Because whether you realize it or not, you're going to end up hiring more people, whether they're outsiders or people you hire as employees, or you're going to extend the length of the project, which is going to end up costing you more money. So being honest about where you are is critically important. And looking at the total cost, yes, it can be a little scary. Yes, I understand that sometimes institutions say, we're going to do this and we have $10 million. Okay, good to know. That doesn't mean you cheat and you don't say what other costs there are over the $10 million. It means all in, what's it going to cost you? And then there's lots of solution categories, right, at different price points. And they're good solutions. So don't be afraid that there's not a solution within your price category that also allows you to do the good and necessary work like process redesign, like data governance. If you don't do those things, your project is going to end up costing you a lot more down the road. Joy, do you want to talk a little bit about being decisive?
So, you know, I lead a lot of the ERP selection for campus work. So I get to talk to clients all the time about what they need and what they're going to choose and that sort of thing. And the one thing to think about is you've got to choose something that's going to work for you. So whether it works for somebody else or not, you can't let that decision bother them. Well, you know, the university down the street, they did this. Doesn't matter. You have to do what's right for you and what's right for your institution. And then once you make that decision, the biggest thing is you've got to stick to that decision. Because just think about it like this, like Liz just talked about, every little change that you add to your scope, every little change that you make is now going to delay. You lost 2 weeks because you went this way instead of going that way. Every little decision is going to delay you. So be true to your decision. Make your decision, stick to it, and then go from there. The other thing that I like to do, and this is the analytical side of me on top of everything else, is I like to do, when I'm working with clients, do a 20-year budget out so that they know what their costs are going to be, not only for the next 5 years while they're implementing, hopefully less than that time, but for the next 10 years but I want to go out 20 years because typically we're going to keep these systems for 20 years because they are they're such a massive project for everything. I want to go out 20 years. I want to know what the costs are going to be. And I include in that implementation costs. And if I try to do everything I can with them, looking at the institution's budgets, what the savings are, this type of thing, how much new money you're going to use, what your cost savings are going to be from your current system to your new system. And what's been interesting over the last couple of clients that I've had, I've been doing this. I have found that it's like somewhere there is an ROI. There is a return on investment. You are actually spending less money at some point, which I found was fascinating. And it's usually happening between year 10 and year 13. Now you're saying, geez, that's a long time for an ROI. But the positive news is at some point you're getting positive returns from the work that you're doing, which to me was just fascinating to see that there actually is a positive return. And this includes all kinds of, you know, escalations of costs and everything else. So I'm trying to put all of that in there. And I was really pleased to see that we do have an ROI 10 to 13 years, depending on the cost of whatever you have going there. So that was really exciting.
It is exciting. And it gives CFOs throughout higher ed hope, Joy. And we need to give them some hope right now. So
Yeah, so I would say, you know, even if CampusWorks is not doing that, do your own total cost of ownership. Look at the ROI. Do it for your institution before you get started so that you know what that number is. I think that would be really, really, really interesting for me, fascinating, because there's that geek side of me there. But it does provide some really neat numbers and a way to look at data that you're not necessarily doing that before that.
So I just want to encourage you, if you've got some questions, please feel free. Or, you know, if there are myths you want us to bust or if you disagree with something we're sharing, please don't hesitate to pop in a Q&A or to put something in the chat.
Yeah, and I just threw up our last slide here just for final thoughts. I do have one more. But one of the things I want to also remind people of is when you're doing this, the reality is change is going to be hard. People are going to leave. People are going to get burned out. They're going to leave your institution. So think about staffing. Work with HR and find out what your options are for staffing, for backfill, for everything else. So that actually goes back to the budgets. It goes back to change and so much more. So you know, maybe get HR involved early on in working with that. And Rita just put a question in here. You know, what if the workstream leads are unfamiliar with what is possible regarding redesign? What are the strategies? So we're back to business process redesign here. You know what you're going in. You know, look at your processes. Try to transform them. Use some best practices. Vendors will come with some, but that may not do everything you want. Everybody is different. Every institution has their own processes built in. Some of them are necessary. Others you just do because you've always done them that way. Those are the ones you need to change.
Agreed. So. Agreed. And you know, getting people exposed, if you're going to do process redesign internally at your institution, get the people who like to break the rules, who aren't afraid to ask why, you know, like a four-year-old, just keep asking why, because unless you do that, you are going to rebuild what you have. And because it's not good enough, right? The other thing is expose people to other best business practices, not just your business practices. I know it's heresy, but it is not true that you all have very unique business practices. I mean, you don't, you might have unique business practices now, but you do not need to. And that is not what is distinctive about your institution. It's just really not. And so, you know, you need, one of the reasons we often get called upon to help with this work is because we can say, well, you know what, we've done this at hundreds of places. And yeah, no, here's the practice. Let's talk about what you're trying to do. Oh, that's a really cool program. It actually fits in that standard process. Yeah, not the way you're doing it now. But yeah, it does, right? And so that you really have to, as we say, push on the bruise, right? You know, when you hit a bruise and you kind of flinch, somebody has at the institution has to be brave enough to push on that bruise and say, why are we doing that? Yeah, I know it's uncomfortable, but, you know, it has to be done. Chuck's asking.
I heard somebody say one time, one of our consultants said, nobody ever comes to your institution because of your accounts payable system. You know, the students don't choose your institution because of that. And you're not unique in the way that you do accounts payable. So that's kind of an interesting way to look at that, too.
Here's a good one for you, Joy, from Chuck, about the makings of the project team.
Project team. This is going to be interesting. So your project team is going to have several things. Obviously, executive sponsorship is at the top. And I would expect them to spend 2 to 3 hours a week, and I'm saying that now for the executive sponsors on the call, you know, spend that time a week just knowing exactly what's happening. But then you have a steering committee, which may be people who are involved in that, could be chairs of the different areas that you have. So if you're doing HR finance, you have somebody in charge of finance and somebody in charge of HR. So those might become chairs, but you have a steering committee. And on that steering committee is also your project manager. So maybe depending on the size of the project and the institution, maybe there's a whole PMO office, which could include your project manager, maybe a program manager, depending on how large it is. And that would be responsible for all that, but also change management. And perhaps in that project management organization is also somebody to do training. And I think sometimes we forget about that training. But that is a huge part of the transition management. I didn't think of that word all of a sudden. So training is also there. And then, of course, you have your SME. So you have a work stream lead, whether that's financial aid or whether it's accounts payable. There's a lead in that work stream and then SMEs below that to help with the decisions. So the interesting thing about project management, too, in the organizational chart is how decisions are made and which decisions are made. So you're going to need to give your SMEs and your work stream leads the flexibility to actually make those decisions, knowing that certain decisions will have to go back up to the steering committee. But just having that flexibility to make the simple decisions right there instead of waiting around, because that will also delay you and raise your budget as well.
And to your further point, Chuck, I usually see like a three-legged stool in the kinds of work that have to get done, right? So there's work that can only be done by people within the institution who can validate data, say that the answer is correct, et cetera, right? And then the other leg of the stool is the company that's providing the software, and they may or may not be providing the services as well, right? Some do, some don't. So in that leg, you may have implementers and software providers, right? And that could be more than one company over there. Then the third leg of the stool are the people who are supporting the institutional requirements, because it is a rare institution that has everything they need to be able to run a project of this magnitude, right? And that's where they typically lean on companies like CampusWorks, right? For things like change management or project management or business process redesign or whatever. But whatever your institution can't do, right? They don't have the capacity or the experience to do, then there's that third leg of the stool. We often also get called upon to be like the mediator and the referee between what's happening with the institution's decisions and what's happening with the vendors. Because sometimes when something doesn't work the way the institution would like it to work in the software, somebody has to sort of go to the balcony like and look down on the whole thing and say, okay, that's a crazy business process. I don't know why you'd really want to do that anyway. Or that's a legit concern. This software really needs to be addressed in that way. And institutions tend to find it easier to have a third party having those conversations going forward. Go ahead, Joy.
I was going to say a lot of public institutions now, depending on the state that you're in, I know I've had to do this, have those internal independent verification and validations that have to be done. They're kind of a neat way to make sure that you're still on track and that you can, that you're doing exactly what you need to be doing. And so I see that a lot in public institutions, that are basically state funded type thing.
Great point. How long should a student information system conversion take in a mid-sized school? It does depend on the solution you've purchased. It also depends on the capacity of the institution. One of the things we find is that some institutions are really happy to spend a lot of extra money to get extra help, but then they don't make the space on the calendar to allow the project to proceed in a timely way, right? So there has to be two things. It's not just about the staffing, whether it comes internally or externally. It's about the calendar time so that decisions can be made so you can move it along. I would say on average, tell me if you agree, Joy, and student implementation these days is taking 18 months-ish,
right? Yeah, 18 to 24 months is what I'm seeing, depending on, like you said, exactly what the software is. I want to go back to something, too, that Chuck asked, because you asked about implementation partners. And I think we use that term and we just throw it out there and expect you to know what that is. But there are vendors who will implement their own software. There are vendors who will not and will actually depend on another partner to do that. So either way they're doing that, that's what we consider the implementation partner. And also when I've looked at implementation contracts, it's been a two in the box kind of thing. So what that means is that while there's one person on your team, there's also a person on the implementation team. So there's two of you doing the work, then you're doing that journey together so that you're learning as you go. And it's not just, let me get the system in, but there's hopefully knowledge transfer going on at the same time.
Yeah.
At least that should be the goal of what you're trying to do.
Exactly. Yeah.
But we're getting close to being out of time, but any other questions?
What are you most concerned about? Be interesting to see if you all were up to putting it in the chat. Be interesting to see for you each to see where others are.
And while you guys think about that, I'm bringing up the last slide, which is just basically, you know, hey, if you want to continue on, you want to move this, here's a little recommended next step, something to do tomorrow. Look at 90 days and look at 6 months out so that it will help you get your transition, your project going. While I wait for you guys to put something in the chat, which you're not doing. As I think about implementation, the biggest thing is, can I do it? Can I do it on budget? Can I do it on time? You know, will I have the resources to do that? That's probably some of my biggest things there. Rita says she's concerned about transition management, organizational change management. Tony's like, the biggest thing is getting buy-in from the entire college. That's probably very true. You know, institutional alignment. So there's everybody, you all seem to be along the same lines with everything. You're all talking about institutional alignment, which I find fascinating.
You know, I would say, don't be afraid to ask the hard question. You personally may not be the one who can do that, but try not to let your organization wimp out from being really direct about what's on people's minds. It's the only way you're going to be able to make change. And what I find is it's easier for us to do it because we're visiting, we're not there permanently, but we don't do it in a disrespectful way. And I can only imagine that, you know, you're living in the neighborhood, you're living in the community. There's a way for you to ask the hard question to get people to really talk about what they're worried about so that then you can, don't be worried about how you answer the question. First, hear the question. And then your institution can work on how to answer it. You know what I mean? Sometimes we're afraid to ask because we're not going to know the answer, or we're afraid what answer they're expecting. You're just trying to have a dialogue, because if you don't know what's hanging them up, you're not going to be able to help them through the obstacle. So, it has been a delight. Thank you, Tony. Wish we could see you all. Laurel and the team are going to send you some resource documents. Look, Joy and I are passionate about this, in case you haven't noticed. And so we are delighted to truly have no strings conversations with you, because our goal, having been through this a lot, is to help people not suffer so much through this. Yes, CampusWorks has a business to do it. There's no question. But Joy and I are really committed, and some other members of our team, to just making sure that it's not so hard for people. So if you just want to call and chat, or if it's a really bad day, just call and scream. We'll know you were on the webinar and we'll help you out. So thanks, everybody.